If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Craig Bolanos joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the founder and wealth advisor at VestGen Wealth Partners. Their new website is GetRetiredStayRetired.com. Okay, Craig, Dow is down today. The markets took a dip. What's going on here?
Hey, might not have been a great start to January, but sometimes good news is bad news for stocks. And what we all learned today is the non-farm payrolls that came out at 7:30 this morning, the number was hot. We actually created 256,000 jobs. We were only looking for 155,000. So that's good news if you're a citizen of this great country. That's good news for anyone who wants a soft landing and avoid a recession. But it's bad news because it means when the jobs market is hot and the economy is growing, you run the risk of inflation staying elevated. And that means the Federal Reserve is on pause. No rate cuts coming in January.
That also means your retirement funds took a little dip.
It does mean your 401k has taken a dip, but I'm so happy you used the word dip correctly, John, because in any given year, it is not uncommon that we have two dips. I call them 5% dips. In fact, every 14 months, we typically have a correction of at least 10%. We're overdue for that. But if somebody said to me, what should my takeaway be? What's the big important thing to remember on a day like this when it's a sea of red in the stock market? It's that the economy is doing better than expected. And ultimately, that means there is a potential for better earnings, less risk of a recession. And you know what? As a long-term investor, that's what matters to me.
Well, I'm glad you said all of that because it was, as Steve Alexander said, one of those days where good news is bad news. It sounds like if you had to have a day like this or not have a day like this, good jobs means bad for the market, you would make that deal, right?
I would make that deal because what really matters is we don't want things to be too hot. We don't want them to be too cold. We want them to feel just about right. And investing longer term through a climate where we have people that can get jobs, get decent wages, which ultimately drives consumer spending, which ultimately determines the health of the U.S. economy, that's ultimately what's important for all of us.
So is this going to stall, though, interest rate reductions?
I think very specifically is this. We had the cuts in September. We had the cuts in November. We got the cut in December. You and I talked about this on this very program. But looking out to the 8 policy meetings that we have in 2025, there's 8 decision meetings. I don't think there's any cut in January. I don't think there's a chance you see anything in March. The first opportunity to get any form of a rate cut, and 1 to 2 rate cuts at the most this year, John, that's what we think about, is really until July, September. And part
really?
Of that,
wow.
Yeah, out to July or September. And part of that is dictated by the fact that the Federal Reserve needs to see what the policies are going to be that gets enacted from this new Congress once everyone's sworn in. And that's going to take some time because the Federal Reserve doesn't want to be working against fiscal stimulus if it's going to be coming down the pipe.
Fiscal stimulus, what do you mean by that?
Well, we know that you have an administration coming in that some people widely view as pro-growth. But we also have an administration coming in that has a track record and has a history. And one thing is for certain, ever since the election, Treasury bond yields have been going up. And while there's a lot of reasons for that, there's some underpinnings that tariffs could be difficult if they became fruition versus just tough talk and bravado. And number two, if you end up having larger stimulus packages, larger tax cuts on top of the renewal of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, all of that could further spark inflation. And I think the Federal Reserve is going to need to see where that lands before they make additional policy decisions.
Stimulus spending last time, though, was predicated on the pandemic. that's in the rearview mirror. I thought this administration or Congress was going to be a little tighter with the purse strings.
You know, you would hope so. But, you know, when you have the votes and you have the mandate, right? I mean, you can literally pass what you want to pass when you've got control of the Senate, the House, and the Oval Office. Sometimes money gets spent. Both parties have a history of spending a little too much money. That's right. So in no way, shape, or form am I being critical. In fact, I am encouraged by a new administration coming in, pro-growth, less regulation, stimulus. That's good because we're talking about investments and economies right now. But again, we're just going to have to wait and see. But no, I predict no rate cuts until the second half of the year.
We're talking to Craig Bolanos on the Wintrust Business Lunch. He doesn't think the Fed's going to do anything with interest rates until the September meeting. Was that the one you picked, Craig?
I said the first chance is July, more likely September. You see one or two cuts this year.
So while you are optimistic about the economy, the new Congress, and you'd make the trade, a hot jobs report for lower stock indices, how comfortable are you then with the fact that these interest rates, which have been pretty stubborn now, have inched up, are going to stay high? If we want credit card debt to go down, if we want home sales to go up, we're going to have to wait. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I think at the end of the day, what drives home sales is a combination of several different factors unique to each local market. But again, I think what's good for investors and good for citizens of this great economy is to have an unemployment rate staying below 5%. And we're certainly there at 4.1. Don't get me wrong. The fact that we're going to have elevated interest rates hurts small business. Hurts people who have borrowed debt. But John, I don't know about you. I remember having a mortgage at 8 7/8 and things were just fine. I remember having a mortgage at 7 1/4 and things were just fine. And of course, I celebrated my 2.5% mortgage, right. But those days are just never coming back.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because when you and I were paying double digits for our first houses, nobody was sitting on 3% mortgages. So it strikes me as maybe supply would ease some of this, but the real estate market is not going to move that fast if people are not going to sell homes that are mortgaged at 2 or 3%.
No, and we see that throughout the clients at VestGen Wealth Partners, whether it's our core clients, whether it's the adult children. There are lots of people who are choosing to say, you know what, we're not going to move. We're not going to pay the embedded interest rates. Instead of getting in a new house with an additional bedroom, we're going to go back to what we used to do in the 70s and 80s. We're just going to put in bunk beds. So, John, I predict bunk bed sales will continue to stay elevated in the months and year to come.
Yeah, you might not be kidding on that. What do you make about Bitcoin these days, or cryptocurrencies in general?
Well, I mean, whether it's Bitcoin, the headline, the dominant position in the world of virtual currency or any of them, they are here to stay and they are being recognized more and more as an asset class. And once we got to a point that we had not one, not two, but 11 exchange-traded products tracking the spot price of Bitcoin, I think Bitcoin is here to stay. But we all need to understand that the volatility, the VIX in an asset like this is going to be large. And we were trading at 105,000 and then down to 91,000 and then down to back up to 95,000. Do I think Bitcoin's going to break and have a repeat of the crash it did in 2022? I don't think so. I think there's a lot more institutional and retail support and interest in the asset class that is cryptocurrency as an alternative storage of value.
Okay, well, you answered my next question. An alternative storage of value, which means it's not a currency. It means it's an investment based on something I don't understand, you know, based on, I guess, supply and demand, based on desirability. But based on what? Like, what does cryptocurrency mean for us in the near term?
Well, we have to separate it into two things. You know, at some point in time, are we going to see an elevated amount of transactions, the payments for goods and services using cryptocurrency, I think that's eventually going to occur. Like anything, things have a way of changing. John, it used to be cash, then it went from cash to credit cards, and now it's credit cards followed by digital payment apps followed by cash. But what I think about is from an asset allocation perspective, I'm not saying that people need or are missing out if they don't have cryptocurrency as a part of their asset allocation. But I'm here to say on the front lines as a registered investment advisor, more and more financial advisors, more and more retail investors are wondering whether they should start making small allocations to cryptocurrency ETFs as a part of their long-term financial plans.
But why would I pay for something with cryptocurrency right now, though, since the value of it fluctuates so wildly, you know?
It makes it incredibly difficult to do. In fact, the other comment would be, why should someone rendering the good or service from you, John,
right,
receive a payment in cryptocurrency because of the VIX or because of the risk? All I know is the poor guy who spent 10,000 bitcoins to order a pizza 20 years ago, that gentleman is still sad thinking about dorm room money improperly
yeah.
spent.
Yeah, right. But let's just expand on that. So I have a $1,000 bill and I'm going to pay you with Bitcoin. And now you have $1,000 worth of Bitcoin. And the next day, it's worth $900. That happens, and it doesn't happen with dollars. It doesn't happen with your credit card. So I just don't understand the use of it as currency. It's not a good way to transact business, but if it keeps going up, then it looks like a smart investment, right?
You made a very good differentiator. That's correct. We are not yet there in the efficacy for it to be transactable because of the wide variance in the spot price. Right now, it really needs to be looked through the eyes as an investment or as an alternative storage of value, in the same way people have used gold and silver for a long period of time.
Which do fluctuate, but you don't see people dropping Krugerrands around when they go to the store. So do you think then that crypto is a good place right now? I guess you're answering this for us, but you would put some of your portfolio in crypto. Is that right?
What I'm suggesting is this, and I'm not being evasive, John. Everybody should start getting educated, not just on digital payments, not just on cryptocurrency. People should start reading about blockchain. That's the technology of that open peer-to-peer network. And once people become more educated and once things become more mainstream, I think that ends up being a very personal decision. And people should take a look at whether or not they want to invest in this asset class as a long-term part of their retirement plan.
I'm a little leery about
educated.
Yeah, yeah. What's the future of electronic payments, either person-to-person or person-to-retailer? It seems to me like that's more vulnerable than I want it to be. I don't know. What are your thoughts about that, Craig?
I think I'm a dinosaur, John. When I was in Florida just recently, and now this is a true story, John, I'm sitting at a Publix, right? And here's what happens. The person in front of me, they pay with their phone. Presumably, it might have been a digital payment app. The next person paid with their watch. They paid with their watch. And then here comes me, and I'm trying to decide, as I'll tell you, I'm buying a bottle of wine and some ice cream because we're going to watch a movie at home. Yes, it's a great dinner date. I'm trying to decide, should I use cash or credit card? I felt so behind. But clearly, digital payments are here, and I just saw it in the Publix when I was in Southwest Florida.
I know. I find myself more often than I ever thought I would saying, will you take cash? They look at me like I've offered them beads and a horse hide, you know? I'm like, it's American currency. One last set of questions for you. Just a minute and a half left with Craig Bolanos. And that is, are there areas of the economy that you think are ripe for expansion or you'd be hesitant in investing in right now? I'm thinking leisure, retail, banking. What are the hot areas or the best bets right now?
Well, I think number one, technology is not dead, and people should continue to have that overweight to technology because, again, innovation creates disruption, and that's a very investable asset class. Part number two, geography matters. If you're going to have a lack of interest rate cuts, and you're going to have a stronger U.S. dollar. That creates some significant headwinds for foreign investments. So I think most people's geography should be primarily North America, primarily in the United States. And the last two ideas, John, is I think people should be focusing on bonds for ballast. That means higher credit quality, neutral in their duration, and take a look at that unique hybrid security that is preferred stock. I think it's got merit going into 2025.
Craig Bolanos is the founder and wealth advisor at Vest Gen Wealth Partners. Their new website is getretiredstayretired.com. Nice to talk to you today, Craig. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, John.